On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked if movies have women in them. Are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast. Start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Welcome to the Bechdel cast. My name's Jamie.
My name's Caitlin.
And this is our podcast where we talk about the role of women in movies.
Boy, is it. I mean, girl, is it.
How long girl. Did you play? Was it planned?
No.
I don't know.
I'm nervous about this episode because I've only rewatched the movie once. I've had
half of
an IPA.
Do you remember the time where I didn't watch the movie at all admitted it weeks later?
The Matrix?
The Matrix episode. Yeah. Go back and listen if you want to hear some high-level bullshitting. I still haven't seen The Matrix to this day.
Oh, man, it's pretty good. You wouldn't like it.
I pretended to not like it, and I felt like that was maybe at the right. I felt like I wasn't going to like it. My arm is covered. There's some creepy crawlies in my house, and they're eating me up. And so every time I leave my house, I've been spraying like my entire floor in like bug poison. Mm-hmm. But they've evolved, and my whole forearm is covered in.
Hey, life finds a way.
Don't. This is our episode.
Oh, no. I'm going to keep bringing it back to Jurassic Park.
We were saying today's movie is what you are to Jurassic Park as today's movie is to me. And then I like it and you're like, eh, that's fine.
I'm ambivalent, we'll say.
Right.
Oh, my God.
I know. And our guest could not be more excited about
it. Well, today. It's 3-1 because Aristotle also loves this movie.
Aristotle was reciting lines with me. It was so exciting. People love this movie. And so let's just get into it. The movie today is School of Rock, directed by Richard Linklater, 2003. And our guest, I'm so excited. She's one of my best friends in the whole world. She is the music editor for Dig Boston. She's written for Pitchfork, Esquire, NPR. It's Nina Corcoran.
Hello.
Hello, everybody. Hello.
I just knocked over your ice cream.
Which is also... on brand.
On
eating ice cream talking about School of Rock.
I feel like we've probably eaten ice cream with disposable knives and talked about School of Rock more than one time.
Yeah.
I have like a very vivid memory of us being maybe a little bit intoxicated once, or maybe sober. It could have gone either way, but we went to a Tedeschi's because you wanted to... You wanted to check in on Foursquare before you bought a pint of Ben and Jerry's so that the pint of Ben and Jerry's would be free.
Yeah, I used to do that all
and
the time.
And it worked.
There is a thing where you would get a discount code. Foursquare doesn't do it anymore, but where you checked in the most, you're the mayor. And certain places.
You're the mayor of Tedeschi's. So a lot of history on the cast today. We're talking about School of Rock. Okay, well, let's first discuss our history of this movie. Caitlin, when did you see this movie for the first time?
I believe I saw it either right when it first came out in 03 or sometime shortly after that. I don't know if I saw it in theaters or not, but I only saw it that once until I then rewatched it the other day to prepare for this episode.
You said you could only watch it in 5-minute chunks. Personally, yes. I was triggered.
Look, Mad Max Fury Road... I think the better comparison...
Don't say that, movie.
Do you just not like Jack Black? That's the only people I found who don't like it are people who don't like Jack Black.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's impossible to like this
movie.
People
with no heart.
I really don't. I'm a wretched person with no heart. I thought I liked him okay up until rewatching this movie.
Really?
And then I was like, I find him... Well, here's the thing. I like my comedy to be a little more subtle than he... delivers.
But it's a Jack Black vehicle.
And he's so subtle.
He's in his defense, it's a very nuanced performance.
Okay, I can't argue with that. However, he's just never not mugging the fuck out of whatever scene he's in. And he's just like...
I mean, the shot of the eyebrow truly says it all. Like, could you be leaning into this anymore? I still love it.
But I saw it when it came out and then again, and now I'm just like, I don't think I like this movie. So a more accurate thing than Jurassic Park, which again, I'm going to keep bringing up today, is I don't care for this movie. You didn't care for Mad Max. You said you liked Jurassic Park. Okay.
Yeah,
so
Jurassic Park.
I feel like that's a more appropriate comparison.
Fair. I hated Mad Max and I hate steampunks and I was at... I was at Comic-Con this weekend, and it was a real test of the spirit. A few casualties, but not as many as one would think. Yeah. I first saw this movie in theaters memorably. I think I've actually talked about this with you before, because I grew up in Brockton, Massachusetts. My cousin and I went to see this movie with our aunt, or her mom, my aunt, and someone in the movie theater got stabbed in the foot sometime during the second act of School of Rock, and we all had to leave and come back another day to see the end of School of Rock. We saw it from the beginning, but we didn't know how it ended for days.
Wow.
And we were, and at the time, like, there was Google, but we were 10. We didn't really use it. So we were just like, I wonder if they win. I wonder if they can even go to the Battle of the Band, because someone got stabbed in the foot and the movie theater was closed shortly after. Then we had the VHS. I've seen this movie easily 20 times. It's like one of my favorites of all time. It's so good.
Okay.
Nina, what was your experience of the movie?
I feel like I shouldn't list how many times I've seen it.
No, please.
But it's like definitely over 50. It's ridiculous. Lame? Maybe not.
No.
Incredible? Probably. I'd hope so. I can't stop. But my earliest memory is on a road trip, and I watched that movie, just only that movie, the whole trip over and over. I watched it once, and then I watched it with subtitles, and then I watched the director's cut. And then with like a... And then I watched the one with all the commentary of them talking, and then we were in New Hampshire.
Which is a really good one.
It is. It's so, and because they're like all young talking about it and getting excited seeing themselves on the screen.
Yeah. This movie, it rules. It's so good.
Yeah. I mean, that right there is four times in one car.
Right.
There's a lot of views.
And I think that we were talking about before Nina got here that I think that the age you were when this movie came out is critical to how you feel about the movie. Because we were the exact right. Aristotle was too. We were all 10 or 11 when this movie came out. And the movie's about 10 or 11 year olds starting a band with Jack Black.
Mm. Yep.
And that still sounds like, and now it's like maybe that's a little perverted. But at the time it was like, yeah, I want him to be my teacher. He's so cool.
Yeah, I was, I guess, 16 probably, and I was too cool for school.
You don't fucking have
rock.
Time
But
that got me really good.
I don't. I think it has its merits, but
merits school of rock has its merits.
Well, one of the reasons I am
does it make the grade?
It's well. Look,
sorry.
One of the reasons that I'm a wretched person is that I do not like children. Oh, I don't like movies that star children.
Right, I do forget that you hate and child actors you hate as
child actors, get them out of here.
I hate most child actors, but all the child actors in this movie I have a crush on. So it's different.
I mean, and they're 10 or 11. That's better than when you have like a 6-year-old in a movie. No, thank you. But even so, the cast is largely children, and I cannot get behind it. Do not endorse.
Most
only
of them
adults.
Children who never work again, but with the exception of one, Miranda Cosgrove, who one might argue was a star-making role for her. If by star-making you mean iCarly eventually.
Wait, which character is that?
Summer.
Okay.
Band manager.
Band
also
manager.
Also Tinkerbell. I'm
They're
here
sluts.
For all the
They sleep with the band.
Slut shaming.
This movie. Okay, but I think that's on Jack Black because he made the children groupies.
Well, yes.
And groupies.
But he could have
do sleep
he,
with the band. Historically.
But he also then later says how they're like cheerleaders for it, and I feel like
they're like merch people,
because that's the thing that seems weird, but then they're the ones charged with like designing the clothing, coming up with the name, and they're really excited about it. And then obviously when Summer isn't, he's like gives her the biggest job possible, but mainly band manager. He never actually tells her how to do it or what to do. He lets her decide,
and
like the entire thing is her
out.
Figuring out how to be a leader. She like reads that whole book,
and then later they're like
David
she's
Geffen.
Obsessed with David Geffen. Just some quick stats on this movie before we get into the recap. This movie was the most successful musical comedy ever until Pitch Perfect 2, like 2 years
ago.
Which
I refuse to see because of that. Ugh,
I am like, Pitch stupid. Perfect franchise needs to grow up and let School of Rock have its place in history. So this is a Richard Linklater movie. Let's name some big ones because I have seen a handful of his movies. I have not like a super fan.
Sure.
But
so my favorite of his is Before Sunrise, Before Sunset. I can take or leave before midnight. Maybe I need to revisit it, but those first two, especially of the Before trilogy.
I haven't seen those.
Oh, they are so fucking good. I love them so much. I hate romance movies. I hate romance in general. I hate children. I hate everything that's good about the world.
Can I say it?
Yeah.
So Kaylin loves Before Sunrise so much that she has a sketch on the World Wide Web that is a Before Sunrise Twilight crossover. Oh, and it's really good.
Oh, thanks.
Check it out on her website.
Check out Before Twilight on the internet.
It's, once you know what it is, I just didn't know what it was at first. Mm. But then once I saw, I understood.
It's a low budget production written and edited by Caitlin Durante.
It's an indie.
It's an indie cred. It's an indie fave.
Yeah.
But it's an indie darling.
Cult following.
Linklater is also famous for... Linklater is also famous for Dazed and Confused, Boyhood.
And then last year he did Everybody Wants Some, which I did see.
Oh, I did not.
Which can suck my ass. Did not like it. Richard, okay, we'll get into it. Let's go through School of Rock, which I think we can all agree is his best movie. I legitimately, of what I've seen of his, I like School of Rock better than Dazed and Confused. I like it better than Boyhood. I like it better than Everybody Wants Some. I'm pretty sure that's all I've seen.
Nearing 100th view, and I can say it's still great.
It holds.
Like, however many years later than when I first saw it.
Even the joke about fucking kids is still funny.
I touched How your many children. Movies?
And I think they touched me too. It's so funny. Okay, let's do the recap.
All right, here we go.
This is going to be a fun one. There's going to be, so Nina, so you know, interjections allowed, but Kaylin's also allowed to yell back.
Okay, School of Rock.
Yes.
Is the story of Dewey?
Finn.
Yeah.
He's so fucking cool, man.
He's in a rock band.
Adam Pascal of Rent and Aida.
And that person was in the Once musical. Is that the one with the longer hair? Who's like, Dewey, we're friends, man.
No. Wait, was that guy
that
in the
little
Once
skinny
musical?
One who's in his band? Yeah, he was in. I went to see it with my mom.
Him.
And I was like, oh my God, I'm starstruck. The man from School of Rock.
I was obsessed with Adam Pascal.
Yeah, he did a good job.
He's great in this movie. He's like, because he's like, I'm shirtless and you don't fit in. You're not hot enough for the band.
So Dewey Finn, he's in a rock band. He loves rock music. He does too many guitar solos at their shows. And the band's like, well, we're going to kick you out. And he's like, no. Meanwhile, his roommate, Ned.
Mike White, who also wrote the movie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He has a girlfriend played by Sarah Silverman.
Shrew number one. Shrew we will call one. Her Shrew number one. She's one of three shrews that appear throughout the film.
Right. Shrew number one is like... You need to start paying rent, Dewey. You're freeloading too much.
Poor Sarah Silverman.
Get a job.
Yeah, she's wearing a turtleneck 100% of the time. I think she's treated, of all the female characters, I think she's treated the worst.
Agree. But, and her talents are so wasted in this movie. She's so funny. I love Sarah Silverman.
I hope she paid her rent for 3 years off of having to wear all those turtlenecks.
Yeah. So she's like, you got to start paying rent. And Dewey, he's down on his luck. He's all out of sorts. And then he gets a phone call intended for his roommate, Ned, but it's from this prestigious private school.
And I do love that the first act is real, like the inciting incident is a good old fashioned landline mix up. Couldn't happen today. The little, hello, this is Ned Schneebly. Like, great part. Anyways,
so they give him a call and Dewey answers and they're looking for a substitute teacher.
Which also, like, mind you, he's in the middle of getting calls trying to sell his gear, pawning it off as like ridiculous things, which it is not. But making an effort to make rent selling things he doesn't want to sell that mean a lot to him.
Right.
Crib.
Yep. Which he makes clear is for his... Mike White is the first person I remember in my entire life realizing that you could have blonde eyelashes. Didn't know. So he says specifically, and this is another reason where it's like, no one is nice to Sarah Silverman in this movie. Everyone's afraid of her. Where he's like, I'll do it for you, but not for that turtleneck bitch. You know, he doesn't say it, but I think he almost says worse. So anyways,
it's implied either way. So he gets this call and he pretends to be Ned
Schneebly.
And so he goes to this school pretending to be a substitute teacher, and it's a classroom full of all these young youths of America, and they're accustomed to a very strict academic regimen. And they're like, are you going to teach us or what? And he's just like, I'm hungover. And he's very not into it. He's really just there to try to make some
another
money.
Great exchange. I didn't know what hungover meant when I saw this movie.
Me
and the
neither.
Movie literally teaches you. Does that mean you're drunk? No, it means I was drunk
yesterday.
That means you're an alcoholic. No, it doesn't. Which isn't always true. That's a more square rectangle thing.
So he's having a hard time connecting with these kids at first. And then he's like, wait a minute. What if I start teaching them music? So forget about
the
English
the
class.
Eyebrow part.
Because he hears them playing music and goes and is like, dang, look
right.
at them play. It's Which, very impressed.
And Principal, he says that without words.
Yeah, he just, the eyebrows say it all and then some.
The
that's
eyebrow
a whole
roll.
Script in that's, the eyebrows.
He, I, as
each wave.
Some people are not going to like the eyebrow wave, but I think that he saved about 3 pages of dialogue with the eyebrow wave.
Right, because so Principal Joan Cusack comes in. She's like, it's time for their music lesson. So he hears them playing music. He's like, wait a minute. They're musicians. This kid plays the acoustic guitar. I can teach him how to play electric guitar. This other girl plays the cello. She's now the bass. So he like.
Which, by the way, insane that in this world, Jack Black has never heard of a cello. He's
right.
like,
He's
what
like,
was
that
thing? Cello, you've got a bass.
That's so, also, she so says like 2 or 3 lines in the whole movie, and yeah. that's one of them. But I also am pretty sure that's because of a choice thing.
Really? Because I looked at, she's like one of, we were also talking, because first of all, she was hashtag Aristotle's crush of the movie. Second of all, she and I were born on the exact same date.
Really?
August 18th, 92.
So you play bass?
So cello, it's a bass. but also, she was also never in anything ever again.
She did do her own, I know way too much. She did her own YouTube series of her playing music.
Really?
With, like, under her real name, but I think she changed the name a bit. I wish I remembered it right now.
Okay,
but she did for a really long time, because all those people who had a crush on her
Rebecca
found
Brown.
It were like, oh my God, she did become the music girl of my dreams.
Rebecca Brown.
Yeah.
Fun
yeah,
fact, she became Rebecca Black and now has a hit song.
That's
Friday.
Oh, look, cosmopolitan.com/UK. This School of Rock child actress actually became a rock star. Subhead, Jack Black totally called it. I hate subheads so much. But you need it. The people need to click. Anyways, sorry, let's carry on.
Okay.
We'll get back to her.
It's a long haul.
Yeah.
So this whole classroom full of students, he's like, all right, he signs roles. He's like, you're going to be the lead guitar. You're the bass player. You're the keyboard. And then there's other kids in the class who I guess aren't important. So he's like, or they're not musically talented. So he's like, you can be a groupie. You're going to design the costumes. Hey, you're the lighting guy.
Which
now.
Is all important. It's not that that's
it's
not important.
It's important.
Right.
Don't be
no, they totally
of other
are.
Roles
they totally are. You're speaking to a music journalist.
I know. All right. What I
Watch
meant,
your words.
What I meant to say.
I will write something mean.
She's going to write a subhead. Jack Black totally called it. Kayla Durante sucks.
I told you I'm wretched.
Okay, sorry. Keep
I misspoke. What I meant is, I guess they're not cool enough to be in the band or whatever. Right. Anyway.
Just because you're not in the band doesn't mean you're not in the band.
But he does overlook them at first.
Yeah.
At first, he's like, you can watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he has to like.
Yeah, he gets too excited about the music.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. Right.
Cool it. Dewey.
I guess.
Jack. Basically.
Dewey.
And then they enter. He's like, we're going to enter the Battle of the Bands contest because he is now without a band. So he's using these children to have his own rock band again. That's what this movie is about anyway. So he.
I don't understand what the problem is.
Meanwhile, he's like fooling Principal Joan Cusack, and she's shrew number two. She's like, rules. You're not allowed to take a field trip, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And then things culminate to a point where people figure out that he's been lying this whole time. And they're like, you're not
And you know
Ned.
Who busts him? Shrew number one.
Shrew number one. Yeah.
Have we named Shrew number three?
We have not.
Oh, okay.
She is Summer, the band manager.
Miranda Cosgrove, a very young, adorable, doe-eyed Miranda Cosgrove.
Mm-hmm. Can't sing.
She cannot sing, and she idolizes David Geffen. She rules. Yeah. Can I just, really quick, Rebecca Brown, my birthday twin, is now performing in Spamilton,
in Chicago, which is a parody musical of Hamilton, and is also in Chicago. She's doing great. She has an Instagram account. Yeah, she has an Instagram. She's doing great. She's. I look forward to our shared birthday. Maybe I'll go. I'm going to Chicago next week. Maybe I'll go to Spamilton Chai.
Please do.
Anyways, the end. She's doing fine.
Okay, cool, 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 cool.
She has like three lines in the movie, but she's fine now.
People find out that he is not actually Ned
Schneebling.
And he gets in trouble and he gets fired from his job. There are police there. He doesn't get arrested. Good for him. And then the kids are like, but wait, we still want to do Battle of the Bands. So they go to his house, get him out of bed. He's not wearing a shirt. You do see his nipples. And then they're like, come on.
And they're hard.
They're hard.
They're not soft.
They're like, come on, we're going to the Battle of the Bands. So he drives them in his van to Battle of the Bands. They play a song. It's great. They don't win, but everyone's like, School of Rock, encore, please.
It's an encore.
So they play another song. Yeah, and everything ends up fine. The end.
Right. Ooh, la, la, la. Ooh,
well, they start
la,
School
la,
of Rock, which is a real thing in the world.
Yeah, it's like a real after-school program, right?
Yeah.
Was it a real thing before the movie? It had to
there
be,
was,
right?
Like, not controversy, but apparently they started writing this script, and then that was also happening, but it wasn't meant as, like, a, you know, true story of the people who started that program.
Right.
And the title was going to be something different, or they almost had to change it to something else, the School of Rock title, because of the program.
Oh, interesting. I mean, I'm sure that
guy
the program
was like, that's
benefited
not my life.
It.
And it's like, yeah. And then they were like, if anything, this is going to help boost sales.
It had to have, because
yeah,
I'm sure people assumed
in,
it was associated.
Like every city now.
Yeah, yeah. Because I remember they
literally
have one.
Every city.
Every single city. They have one in Boston, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Also, I think it's funny to mention, I have not seen this musical, but School of Rock has been adapted for the stage on Broadway by none other than my boy and yours, Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Oh.
He and a guy from Downton Abbey. I mean, if we're talking about the man, Andrew Lloyd Webber really does just fit right in there, as does anyone associated with Downton Abbey. But anyway, it's a very successful Broadway musical now as well, although I'm willing to bet it stinks.
My compared mom to called the movie, me when just... they debuted the one of the songs on the Today Show, so I could watch it. It must have been in college when it came out.
Yeah, it was in 2013.
And I was not impressed, because it deviates ever so slightly from the script, which I have memorized, and boy, was my brain not into it. But there's also the TV show on Nickelodeon. I don't know if it's still happening.
There was. When was that on? I did not watch that. I think we were too old for that. It premiered in 2016. Let's see if it's still on. It is in
for research.
Third
fact check.
Season.
Wow.
So School of Rock, all that to say, the story ages very well. People love
a timeless tale.
Rock. People are always going to school. People always want to make school cool. And that's why School of Rock holds up till this very day. And scene. No, just kidding. Okay. I think that there's a lot to talk about in terms of how female characters are treated in this movie. And also, I think expanding that to Richard Linklater a little bit would be helpful, because I was doing some background research. And my research made me like Richard Linklater less. Partially because his most recent film, Everybody Wants Some, is just a big, I mean, have you guys seen it?
Mm-mm. No.
So it's loosely based on Richard Linklater's freshman year of college in the 1980s. And it's about boyfriends. It's about friends that are boys, like boy tribes. It's a very Animal House kind
of vibe. Several different boyhoods are coming together into one
boy tribe.
Movie.
But like barely thought out. It's a fucking drag. It's a real drag. There's a lot of jokes at the expense of women, almost every shot of a girl. And, you know, Richard Linklater in interviews is like, well, but that's how an 18-year-old boy would see it. And it's like, but also, if you're a boy seeing it, then that's how you're taught to view women. Anyways, what an idiot. but in response to, sorry, I'm like, hi, Jack, you can cut this out if you want.
Please.
please, I cannot wait to get it down.
No, I mean, please, go on.
Okay. So also, he's directed a movie called Boy. I mean, I enjoyed Boyhood. I thought, you know, it's a cool film.
It was
fine. I liked it. What did you like
it? It was good. I'm impressed that he got the same people to stay on for a long time.
Right. And, like, it means he's agreeable.
Mm-hmm. Also, like, the thing I remember most is, like, a wordless, probably, like, 30-second thing of when he's really young and the boy finds, like, a dead bird, a dead something, dead in the backyard.
Mm-hmm. I think
it and was he, like, doesn't say anything. He just says, like, death. What is it? And I was like, wow, I'm glad they included this dead animal.
They got me thinking.
That's what I think of when I think of that movie. And then his horrible acting at the end.
Yeah. I mean, he really rolled the dice on that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you're going to get a Haley Joel Osment. Most times you're not. Haley Joel Osment, if you're listening, please come on the podcast. We're waiting for you.
You can do any movie you want.
Freaking Sixth Sense or answer my tweets. Whatever. You don't have to do Sixth Sense. What's a movie you like? I just want to know more about
Forrest Gump.
I just want to know more about things that he likes. Maybe he's into some weird shit. If you're into some weird shit, for sure hit me up. Anyways, everybody wants some. Received generally positively. People are like, it's an ode to boys. What movie fucking isn't? Christopher Nolan just released a movie I keep calling Boy City.
Dunkirk. Yeah.
Why
isn't there a Girlhood? Hello?
Because everyone wants to jerk off to themselves, and I get that. Richard Linklater's a man, and he's able to make movies because he's a man, so he's going to jerk off to himself. Genie. However, so he makes a strategic move, as some people do, after people are like, everybody wants them is making fun of women a lot, and the women who are in it are only objectified. And then he says, well, I am executive producing a women's film now. So he signs on to executive produce a friend of his who's making a movie. Her name is Katie Kokonos. And the name of the movie is I Dream Too Much. It was an indie movie. It came out a couple months ago at this point. And he does an interview, a crummy interview with Vanity Fair, in which he sort of discusses why he feels that women aren't being given opportunities in film.
Oh, I'd love to hear his
insight.
And
he's got some really interesting thoughts. So, question. Why was this the project that finally got you to step into a producing role? Mm-hmm. His answer. Well, I like that it's one of the few young women's films that isn't really centered around a guy or getting a guy or breaking up with a guy. I like that Katie had a real strong vision for a young woman, her own dreams, her own aspirations. And I thought, that's pretty damn unique. You don't see that a lot. There needs to be more voices like that out there.
No.
First of all, thank you so fucking much. because I'm always around trying to get the guy, break up with the guy, and it never occurred to me, you know, that's pretty damn unique.
Sure.
He says, you do what you can, but I think it's just an access question. I think a lot of women in general want to talk about their experience of youth, like Boyhood, Dazed and Confused, Everybody Wants Some, etc. I think they're probably a little more hesitant in the film world to say, oh, my own story, that's worthy of cinema. Jesus Christ. Well, I have to go overdose in the bathroom to go. To continue the quote. I remember doing some interviews on Everybody Wants Some, and people were like, why aren't there any good female roles? Your film's very male. There's no women in it. I'd always say, well, if you feel there's a void, I did executive produce this other movie. So when that film opens, I hope you care or pay attention because it's out there. So instead of saying, hey, maybe I should write a female character that isn't a whore, virgin, or shrew, go see what this other person made. I gave her $10,000 and I would like credit for that.
So he's basically saying,
he's a very like, pat on the back, thank you for trying.
That, it, like,
I don't like it.
Oh, God, his blind. Oh, it's so unique to have a woman tell her own story. You just don't see that much. But do you fucking have any idea why, you stupid idiot?
Right, and also the implication is, like, women are just, this is just starting to occur to them. That they, too, grew up. And they, too, have had feelings that weren't just about how horny they are for me or my fucking friends. And now that they're having these feelings, I'm tossing them a fucking bone. And it's just like, so that interview really, and this is an interview from this year, made me really want to like look back at some of his movies. Because from what I can tell, and I haven't seen them all, it seems like his treatment of women is kind of movie to movie. From what, because I felt, as I remember, I wasn't watching it for this podcast, but like Boyhood, I didn't think was incredibly unfair to it. Just, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, nothing really struck me. With the Before trilogy, it's really just two main characters, Ethan Hawke's character and Julie Depley's character. And Julie Depley's character is solid. It's a very character-driven, mostly dialogue. Not a ton happens in any of the movies, except for just developing their relationship. But her character is very, like, she's very outspoken. She has opinions. She voices them.
Right. But then I would argue in Dazed and Confused, women are not treated very well.
I don't remember it that well, so I can't speak much to it.
In general, I mean, as a rule, there, you know, it is a male-focused film, and the women are objectified, I would say, kind of in the same way as everybody wants them, which he himself connects the two movies as, like, yeah, it's like a spiritual sequel kind of thing, in that it's about young boys who just want to fuck. So anyways, it does seem like there's a lot of nuance here in terms of, like, movie to movie. So let's bring it back to School of Freakin' Rock, for crying out loud. Okay, so that's my, I think my criticism is over for the episode. I did want to bring up, because reading that interview really pissed me off.
Well, that one quote, what you pointed out too, the, like, this being unique and putting, it's just putting, I don't know. I feel like this happens a lot in life, not even just in quote form, but where women having, like, original quote-unquote ideas and being, like, remotely creative or deviating from this setup of, like, I don't even know. I feel like it's just this big thing of putting someone on a pedestal for having an idea, which is not of, like, a normal, like, having ambition.
Well, he's completely failing to acknowledge the fact that women don't get the same opportunities in Hollywood to make movies. Mm-hmm. And the few times that a woman is directing a movie, it's seen as this novel thing. Oh, how original, how unique. And it's just because we've been pushed down all throughout the history of filmmaking and also life in general, society.
Yeah, history of the world.
Right.
It is, in, like, the way that quote, especially, yeah, it's sort of the same quote where it sounds like, and maybe this was taken out of context, but I mean, it sounds like Richard Linklater thinks that women are just starting to direct movies because it just occurred to them.
Right.
That they might have a story worth telling, where it's actually been centuries of, well, not in film, but, you know, like, it's been at least a century long struggle to even get 1% representation, which I think is about still where we're at.
Pretty close.
In terms of directing anyways. Yeah. So that's dumb. but back to School of Rock and its female characters.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about Principal Mullins.
Okay.
Because I think she has, I guess, the most story of any female character.
Or, like, the most focused. I would say so.
I love her. I don't know how well she's treated by the story, but as a character, I love her. She's in charge. She's very good at her job. She is respected by...
to some
pretty
degree.
Pretty much every... but, like, she is by pretty much everybody, I feel like.
Because I don't think anyone thinks she's doing a bad job.
Right. But yeah. There's...
so, like, liking someone and then not, like, respecting them are really different.
Sure.
Yeah.
She's respected. But I think she acknowledges... and then there's also a scene, like, in the teacher's lounge where she's, like, harping on about something, and Dewey's like, is she always like this? And they're like, oh, yeah. Like, she... they don't really see her as, like, someone... which is makes sense because
yeah,
she's their
I've
superior.
Yeah, I've seen every boss like that. Yeah, we're like, yeah, he's so fucking uptight.
And then there's that scene where they go out to coffee, which ends up being a giant mug of beer instead of coffee. She's like, are you sure you don't have coffee? And he's like, oh, I'm sure.
She's so good.
Afterward, she's like, no one thinks I'm cool. I had to become this bitch. And he's like, no, you're cool. So I kind of like that scene where she's like, this role made me have to be a certain way, or at least she feels that way.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And she's acknowledging that because I'm a maybe a woman in power, I had to assume this role to be respected. And
right.
I like that she acknowledges that and that the movie addresses it. Is it the most poignant thing ever? No.
But they do it. Yeah, they do it.
I remember when I was a kid, too, that really stuck out to me because it was, like, it felt like the only point in the movie that was, like, legitimately serious. Like, I didn't fully understand what it was they're getting at. I also, like, didn't even know that she mouthed the word bitch. I was like, what's she saying? But because it does, like, it does get serious and he visibly seems uncomfortable because I think he feels bad for thinking she's uptight, but having her talk about that, like, she felt like she had to become this uptight mm-hmm. version and couldn't really balance both.
Well, because most yeah. movies will have a role very similar to hers, where mm-hmm. it's like the boss, she's a shrew, she's very uptight, and we only see her in that role. We never right. see her, like,
we don't get that moment.
Be like, yeah, I know that I've become this. I didn't ever want to be this person, but this is who I had to become to be respected in this role.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great point. Mm-hmm. First of all, Joan Cusack fucking rules. Every line read she gives in this movie is the best line read. I wonder how, I feel like she never had to do a second take.
She also has like really good off, I think, lines that she came up with for improv stuff. Mm-hmm. That scene in the teacher's lounge where they're like, after she stops giving her speech and Jack Black's like, oh, is she always like that? They like pan to her with their conversation, the main one, but in the yeah. background, she's like, and then the turkey sandwiches touch the peanut butter yeah. tray, and you know this is a big deal. And I'm like, Joan, killing it.
Yeah. There's, oh, what I was going to say.
Sounds so serious, too.
It's, and the way she's like, always like a little bit hunched over, she's like, I know. Mm-hmm.
And she does really good pursed lips always, especially when drinking that beer or like sipping it yeah. really slowly.
She's really allowed to Joan out in this movie, which is like, so, it's a so good. Phrase. I also appreciated that the story does not push her and Dewey together romantically. Yeah. It's maybe a little bit implied, but for the most part, I think it's mostly a friendship, where even at one point she asks if he'll go to parents' night with her. Because mm-hmm. She's like, it's not a date or anything. I just like being around you makes me feel more comfortable, which is friendship. Yeah. And I don't think she really necessarily has the vocabulary for friendship, unfortunately. But like, it would have been another super easy choice for this movie to be like, and then
totally
the yeah. uptight principal and the cool fucking like sort of pervert substitute teacher make love.
And having it phrased too in a way where like that absolutely could have happened, especially then. Right. I feel like that steals whatever progress she's made as being something that he showed her how to do instead of her just like realizing she doesn't have to be that way if she doesn't want to. Mm-hmm.
Right. And yeah, it's like she, by the end, she's not doing, I mean, I guess she's maybe doing a little bit less of a good job in that she's endorsing the School of Rock. But also it's like she doesn't really have to sacrifice anything. I feel the way a lot of female characters have to, where she does her job throughout, including the greatest line read ever of, I've just been informed that your kids are missing. Shrug, which is so good. But she doesn't really, like, nothing is taken from her, which was also refreshing. As she continues, you know, we assume she continues to have her job. It's implied at the end that maybe she's going to hook up with the new guitarist wearing the half leather jacket.
The most uncomfortable. Every time I watch this, I, like, have to look away. I can't sit. It's, like, too much uncomfortable
because he's like, it's all on him, dude.
You're hot. And she's like,
and there's that sex warm? Tattoo on his abs. Yeah. It's awful. Every bit.
It's so funny. But again, it's like she is, at first glance, a shrewish character. Mm-hmm. But for me, that is subverted enough through the story and actually giving her character some attention and an arc of, I feel like her arc is she realizes she doesn't need to be, I mean, and I guess this does speak to the shrewd, like, you don't have to be so fucking uptight. But I think she, like, in the context of this character, she realizes she can be more herself and still be very good at her job. And mm-hmm. this is sort of a male imposed, but like, you can like Fleetwood Mac and be a good private school principal, which is, you know, it's not the perfect lesson, but I like it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It works for me.
Yeah, I mean, she's sort of adhering to this, like, society's rules dictate that I have to be this very uptight, especially because it's like the private school sector. These kids' parents are paying $15,000 a year for them to attend, which actually is not that much.
I was considering college.
Well, that, and I've known of like private elementary, or maybe it was high schools, I don't know, but that shit costs so much money.
It's 03, baby.
True.
Loosey goosey.
I almost said pre 9/11. It wasn't.
It was not.
But it was first, well, no, first, second Bush admin. Mm-hmm. First half of the
times
second Bush
were
admin.
Different.
It was weird. I did want to bring up that this movie comes out just at the sort of as the man-child trope is really taken off, and it's going to stick with us till this fucking day. Seth Rogen is still around. He's still alive. Did you know no one's harpooned him yet?
That's how he's going to go.
This is
it's
one
been
of
foretold.
The, he's yeah. gonna. I'm gonna harpoon him. I've threatened to do it before. I hate the man-child trope, but in this again, this movie is a big fat exception where it just works. I don't know. It
that,
just works.
That's
for
why
me.
I think don't, that's yeah. what it is. It's the man-child yeah. surrounded by literal children, and I can't handle that many children in a movie.
Which is fair. I did want to bring that up because that is a huge pet peeve of mine. That again in this movie just gets a full pass, and I openly love him. Let's talk about the female students.
Mm-hmm.
Can we talk about Tamika?
Yes.
Tamika's like by far, I always think she's the best character in this whole movie.
I think so too.
So she's the student who he calls Turkey Sub originally, which I thought was because she was heavy, but it's because he takes a turkey sub out of her desk the first day.
Right, he steals her lunch.
And I, yeah. for so long, I was like, this is my biggest complaint with this movie. Why are you fat shaming this wonderful girl? But
well, also the movie made the choice to have her be the only character with food in her desk.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah. Well, that's true.
Or that was, like, willing yeah. to share it. Yeah.
True. Maybe she's just a very generous
let's
person.
Get, let's get
not
Tamika
on the bright
to be the
side.
Date.
Yeah. Yeah. She's great.
Yeah, so, she's great. He does take her turkey sub.
Yeah. So with her, the fact that, like, she's very quiet, gets assigned, I think, security as a job, and then mm-hmm. comes up to him after and is like, I actually want to be a singer and is too afraid to sing and stuff, and then overcomes that, sings, has, like, an incredible voice. And
so good.
But it's just, like, that scene before... I think it's the auditions for the Battle of the Bands where she gets too nervous and pulls him aside. I go back to all the time, and every time I watch it, I feel like the older I've gotten, the more I appreciate the language in that scene, because she says that she's too nervous to sing, and he asks why, and she says, I'm afraid they're going to laugh at me, that they're going to call me fat. Mm-hmm. And he says, like, Tamika, that's not a problem. And, like, it's just, the wording is, like, he never actually says, like, you're not overweight, or, like, you're not, because she is mm-hmm. a bit heavier, and he also isn't, like, you can go on a diet or, like, try to make her feel like there's other options. He just says, like, what you want to do is what you want to do, and being fat isn't – that's not equivalent to being ugly. And there's, like, so much throughout all of that. And he goes and says, like, you know, Aretha Franklin, she's a big lady, but she goes on stage, she can sing, and everyone wants to party with Aretha.
Yeah, like, party the best with Aretha.
Reason possible. And then he's like, and, you know, me, like, I have a weight issue too. She asks why he doesn't go on a diet, and he just says, because I like to eat. Is that a problem? And then goes on to say, like, but then people worship me and, like, accept me when I'm up there. And then just basically says, like, you can sing if you want to, but it's up to you. And the fact that he's not, like, you're not, I promise, let's just do this. And that it's still up right. to her to decide.
Right,
and
he gives,
like,
her the choice.
And that I just, like, it's always so, I'm, like, rewatching it warms my little heart.
It's a great, I mean,
I do like
I'm, like, the
scene.
Fact that he doesn't shame her, that he's, like, it's okay to eat or be overweight as long as you're comfortable with yourself. I'm just like, wow. Especially, I feel like movies of that time are so bad
right.
with that when I go back to rewatch.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Richard Linklater movies are historically pretty bad with that. I mean, this is written by Mike White. So
good guy, Mike White.
Good guy, pale
blonde
eyelashes
Mike White.
The blonde eyelashed god we know as Mike White. But you're totally right. Like, as I've gotten older and watched that scene, it is kind of remarkable how it holds up pretty much 100%, like, yeah. in the way. And Tamika's just cool. Like, she's fucking cool and so talented. And mm-hmm. she's wearing her Avril Lavigne out. Everyone looks like Blink 182 or Avril
so
Lavigne.
Great.
The
they
end.
All have those, like, hair pieces that are bright pink that I always yeah. wish I had, but I was not cool enough. But then
no.
I learned I was. Just had to believe.
You were the
just
whole
like
time.
Lawrence.
Exactly, Mr. Cool.
Well, that's. I wanted to talk about the kid because.
The kid.
All of the story treats, there's like two male students that have arcs and then two female students that have arcs, and then the rest are kind of tertiary, which is fine. They're mm-hmm. not all going to have an arc. But I did like that sort of regardless of gender, all the students were treated with either respect or not respect, depending where we're at in the movie, mm-hmm. by Dewey, which I think is a testament to, even though he's a, you know, man-child character, he is respectful of the students and really does listen to them, and there's like scenes where he's like collaborating with them
yeah.
and treating
no
them just as equals. Right. No more secret songs. Or when my favorite part where they're collaborating was when Zach's secret song, where rock is the reason, rock is the rhyme. And he's like, no, rock got no reason. Rock got no rhyme. I'm like, you guys are just fucking pals. I love it. Like, but
the- oh, and then he says too, right after that, because he's like, suggests that, and Zach's like, okay, because they all have been taught. I mean, their parents are all like super strict and terrifying.
Right.
Especially his. And then he's like, well, no, like, it's a suggestion. This is your song. Like, yeah. It's up. And it's just like, so I'm like, wow, you respect children. Who does? Not enough people.
Not me.
But I think, yeah,
we're changing the lyrics. Zach accepted.
Sorry. Like, but like seeing that when you're probably, again, like seeing that when you're like 11, you're just like, yeah, cool. Yeah.
And when he does that whole song of like teaching them to basically like flip off whatever stresses them off. Yeah. And it's like, what angers you? And then I forget her name. The brace face girl says, mm-hmm. homework, and then the adorable, like, smallest child of the bunch is just, like, bullies.
Yeah.
Really sad and slow, and you're like,
there's a whole other movie here.
I think what bothered me about the dynamic of the band, at least, mm-hmm. is that all the main parts of the band, which is Zach gets lead guitar, Lawrence gets keyboard, who's the drummer?
Spazzy McGee.
Yeah, Freddie.
little
who likes to burn stuff. The little rebel.
Oh yeah. What do you like to do your time?
I don't know, burn stuff.
He's like, okay, recess forever. Sorry. Okay.
And then there's the bass player whose name is Katie.
Yeah.
So she,
August 18th, 1992. Great day for everyone.
She's pretty much the only, because you can, the backup vocals, they're kind of backup. So if we're just like isolating the main members, the frontman of the band, we only have one girl.
Mm-hmm.
She gets very little lines of dialogue, not a lot of screen time.
Weirdly enough, her main moment is, and I know you know, is the exchange she has with Freddie, a.k.a. Spazzy McGee. Mm-hmm.
About Meg White.
Yeah, where he's like, name two good female drummers. And then she names at least one good female drummer. I'm not a huge Meg White.
Go for it. No, that's something that, like, there's so many drummers that get credited who have simple beats who just, like, do what she is doing and she's doing what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Who get credited as, like, being, like, Ringo. Everyone always makes jokes about how he's not a super intricate drummer or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, she has a simple part. If you play drums every day and go on tour all the time, like, she can play. She can do stuff beyond that, but that's just her role.
Right.
And people always, like, I don't know. There was a really good, really, really good piece on Meg White and, like, how she doesn't get the respect she's deserved and has always been, like, the butt of the joke on Hazlitt, maybe?
Oh, okay.
I have to look it up. But, like, so when she names those people and does, like, Sheila E., Meg White from the White Stripes, and he's like, mm-hmm. she can't drum. She's like, she's a better drummer than you. That
that was a great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Especially because, like, I feel like it's, like, trying to balance it. But I've always been under the impression that Katie doesn't talk because she didn't want to. I think when they had rehearsals, which I also like to be idealist and think, like, they didn't have a lot of girls try out for the other parts. Maybe they did. I don't know. There's still, I'm sure, sexism that comes into play there in terms of who you choose. But I think they chose her because she was really good at bass and she didn't want to talk. Because even when Jack Black is telling her how to do those, like, big poofy lips and stuff.
Right.
She doesn't, I'm pretty sure she, like, doesn't talk at all during that. She's not even like, mm-hmm, okay. Like, no, like, one syllable words or anything.
Right.
And at the end, she's the only one in the credits who doesn't solo.
Mm.
And you can tell because of editing, I think either she did or she didn't because she gets scared on camera.
Oh,
because she's also, like, clearly still does
the
music.
Actress. Right.
But I think she was someone who was, like, wanted to play and do this and they wanted to have her.
Mm.
And I think we're almost, or I don't know, but it seems like they were like, we care enough about having you that it's okay if you don't have a lot of lines.
Okay.
Because she has a lot of the iconic stuff with, like, the cello that she could have been more involved in. But she just, like, always looks terrified.
Right.
Yeah.
Then make the keyboard player a girl. Or, like, mm-hmm. I don't know. There were more opportunities to have more of, like, the main band be one of those characters. Or more than one, be a girl.
Mm-hmm.
And with lines and an arc and stuff like that.
I mean, that said, three, if you're not including Jack Black, three of the four main people are white. Lawrence is the only one who's a person of color. Like,
mm-hmm.
that's something else, too, that I, rewatching, feel like their class is more diverse than, like, I feel like for a private school, probably more diverse than what I imagine it would be.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In terms of casting.
Right. I agree in terms of the band, but in terms of the class as a whole, we do get 2 male student arcs, 2 female student arcs. The female student arcs are Tamika and Summer. The male student arcs are Zach and Lawrence. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So in that way, it kind of, I agree in terms of like musical representation, but in terms of the story, I felt pretty good watching it this time of like Summer does get her arc of she's the little shrew, mm-hmm. basically, and is originally presented as an annoyance and a foil to Jack Black trying to
goof off.
Yeah. But by the end, he's like, she's going to be the first female president, which still could be true.
Could be.
It, Miranda.
Yeah, go for it, Miranda. We loved you in Drake and Josh. We loved you in iCarly. Time to become the president.
And I feel like they try, given time limit, too, because it probably could have gone longer. Sure. And a lot of the montages try to show, I mean, as any film does, growth between people. But I really like that they show Lizzie McGuire,
the little boy who handles
the lights and like technology stuff, because they during their like the final like battle of the band scene too, they show him and like his work often and from his perspective. Also, the person watching him is a female light technician and not stagehand person and not a boy, which like if you think of like on stage representation, off stage is like way less.
Sure, yeah.
In the music industry, yeah. So I was like, wow, that's nice. And like not what I thought it would be when I noticed that later in life. So I like that they show his stuff and like actually give it credit. They just like credit kids as being smart and capable of learning a lot.
Right.
Which is I'd say pretty true.
Wait, yeah. And the
hard
one
disagree.
Of the most,
no, I'm kidding.
Kids can't learn. School is a waste of time.
And like one of the best and most exciting things of seeing this movie when you're a kid is being like, I'm a kid and I can do stuff.
Yeah.
That's why representation is so important. That's mm-hmm. why we
Yay.
Need
more school representation. Of
Depth, school of Rock.
That's what
too.
I was going to say. Well, and also better representation of women.
Yeah.
Agree.
For sure.
Does this movie pass the Bechdel test?
Yes.
Yes, it does.
Let's.
It does.
So there's a scene where, although, do we know that teacher's name? Where the principal is talking to a lady teacher, and she's like, don't have the peanut butter sandwiches.
We don't
touch
know her
the
name.
Other sandwiches.
That, okay. That scene does not pass.
Okay. At least there are 2 women interacting.
Yes. It doesn't happen as much as it should. There's no scene Sarah Silverman is in that I saw that passes the Bechdel test.
Right.
Unfortunately. But there's a scene between Joan Cusack and a child where she's yelling at the child,
yeah.
But also like, do you want a hug? And she's like, no. And then she's like, okay, have a good day, Emily. That passes the test.
Mm.
And then there's a scene right after that. I think that it does pass because I think she's talking to one of the teachers who we learn has a name in a previous scene, even though I don't remember it off the top
of my
head.
When Jack Black leaves the school?
Yeah, where she's like, yeah, the teacher slipped, but we've got a substitute. And so she's technically talking about...
she's like talking about her job. Because
right.
It's about him filling in and explaining what he does.
Either way, it already passes.
But minimally.
Yeah.
It's minimally.
Like right.
There are so many opportunities for like the 3 backup singers who were all girls to mm-hmm. be like, hey, I like to sing. Me too. Like they could have talked.
Mm-hmm.
There could have been. There were more opportunities that were missed.
For
all.
Sure.
Sure.
Especially I imagine just like natural conversation that would have occurred that would have been relevant.
Yeah.
Between everyone.
Summer, as the band manager, was control, like, you know, had jurisdiction over everybody. She could have talked to the backup singer. She could have mm-hmm. talked to the bass player, all kinds of people, but we don't see any of those scenes.
So let's all give School of Rock a nipple rating on our famous nipple rating scale.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not how much you like the movie, but how well you think it treats women on a scale of 1 to 5. And then we're going to need some description of those nips.
Yeah.
I'm going to give this movie a 3.5. Nipples.
Okay.
Because Richard Linklater in a whole, I give him a punch in the mouth as of right now. That interview really bothered me. But this movie, the shrew problem is almost entirely responsible for why I'm going to knock off points. And I think if I was really being honest, it's more of a 3.5 though. The shrewishness, especially of the Sarah Silverman character, which is like a double punch in the gut because it's like, don't do that to Sarah fucking Silverman. Are you kidding me?
Every scene she's in, she's like...
Right. So that's not fair. But we do see growth in our main female character, Principal Rosalie Mullins, played by Joan Jonanout. I appreciate that they sort of take a stereotype and, whether intentionally or not, at least subvert it. Tamika, amazing. Mm-hmm. Summer has, she has an arc. She goes on to become iCarly. It's all good. I'm giving the nipples too. I'm giving two of them to Adam Pascal because he's going to need them. He's going to film Rent for 2005. He's busy. He's going to need those nipples. I'm not going to take them away from him. I'm assuming that whoever we don't give nipples to ceases to have them. I'm giving one blonde nipple to Mike White. Very pale. And then I'm giving the last half a nipple to Spazzy McGee.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with four. I went in originally thinking more, but then hearing a lot of your thoughts about it made me change my mind, which makes sense. Because Sarah Silverman really doesn't at all, which is the one that I knew ahead. But then Joan, I feel like I always thought of her more as changing. But there often isn't, because the lines she has are in the background. Mm-hmm. But is it weird? I, like, want to give it to kids as an award, but then I'm also like, no, that's wrong.
This is a safe space. Give the children nipples. They need them. Or they grow up humanity will cease to be. Who will we milk?
Feels too weird, so I'm not going to. I'm going to give it to one to Jack Black's ex-bandmate who was in Once, because my mom loves that musical.
Good for him. Shout out to that guy.
I'm going to give two to that woman who works behind the board, the soundboard at Battle of the Bands.
Yeah.
Respect her. And then I'll give one to Joan.
She deserves it. Yeah. She earned it. Mm-hmm. She's worked so hard.
I'm going to give it 2.5 nipples. I'm sorry, but it's still largely
that's fine.
A man's movie. Jack Black steals the show, and by that, I mean...
He's given the show!
He steals it?
The show's written for him! It's his show!
And a lot of his interactions are with other boys in the band, fair. So it's still a very male-heavy movie. The female characters that there are, as we pointed out, are often very, like... uptight, high strung,
turtleneck.
So,
turtleneck.
And then of the ones who
very turtleneck vibe.
Of the ones who aren't, barely get any screen time. Tamika, great character. I love her. She doesn't get a ton of screen time or lines. Doesn't play a huge role in the story. As tender and wonderful as her scene is, where she's like, "I'm afraid people are going to laugh at me because I'm fat." Sarah Silverman, Summer, Principal Joan Cusack, they're all like, which is fine. There are people like that. That's totally cool. But let's see a broader representation of women. There are other types of women like me, wretched, but also cool. Anyway, so I give it 2.5 nipples. They belong to Jack Black, the nipples that we see, that the children also see. And then the half nipple goes to... I'm going to say Julie Deply from Before Sunrise.
Cool.
Because we see her nipples in Before Midnight, actually. So that's the half nipple.
Hey, do you ever think Jack Black and Jack White hang out? Anyways.
Every day.
Thank you so much,
Thanks
Nina.
So much
Thank
for
you.
Where can people find you online?
I'm on the internet, on the Twitter. My name is Nina Corker, and that's my handle with an underscore.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, you can find me in print in Dig Boston if you live in the city. And otherwise, my name is very Googleable. There's not a lot of us Nina Corkerns out there.
It's me, a lacrosse player,
and a cool girl who lives in Canada.
Hell yeah. Yep.
We'll tag the shit out of you.
Yeah. There's a lot of Jamie Loftuses out there, and I almost hooked up with one time.
Whoa. More on
another
that later.
Another story for another day. Yeah. All right. Thanks for listening to the Bechdelcast. You can find us on Twitter at Bechdelcast. You can find us on Instagram at Bechdelcast. We just got a website. It's bechdelcast.freaking.com. Give us money. We need money really bad. There's a place to click for money for us,
donate,
which we need.
Please.
Money for us is good always. Mm-hmm. We're coming to New York in September. Come to that. I keep wanting to say September 11th. It's not September 11th. It's September 9th. We're all fine. we're going to have a great time.
At the Cinderblock Comedy Festival.
It's gonna be a hip and a hop and a fun time.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for being here. I just punched a water bottle.
Okay, bye.
Gotta go.
Bye.